We interrupt your regularly scheduled podcast to bring you Listen, Watch, Discuss. Enjoy the show. Hey everyone, welcome back to Listen, Watch, Discuss. As always, I'm your host, Brent Aiken, and on tonight's episode, I will be talking about the first half of Season 2 of The Owl House. Now, if you have been listening to my podcast for a while now, you'll probably know that back in Season 1, last November, I did a podcast reviewing Season 1 of The Owl House. I basically was just talking about how much I really did come to love the show and enjoy it, it's like filling the void that Gravity Falls left when it ended, and very rightfully so, considering the fact that its creator, Dana Terrace, is dating the creator of Gravity Falls, Alex Hirsch, as of right now. And I think they've been dating for a few years, actually. So, and also, not to mention that I believe that she's also worked on Gravity Falls. And Alex Hirsch voices a main character on the show as well, just like he did in his own show. So I think that's pretty cool. I talked about Season 1. Season 1 was great. And Season 2, and I will be going into spoilers, so if you haven't seen all of or any of Season 2, then don't listen to, go watch it and then come back and listen to this episode. Season 2, I kind of got into the show a little later, because I started watching Season 1 back in, I think I watched it all in, a week. I watched the entirety of Season 1 in a week back last November. And when I got to the Season 1 finale, I was like, oh my God, this is so great, And it ended on this really cool cliffhanger, and I'm like, I can't wait for Season 2. And, and Season 2 premiered this June, premiered June 12th, 2021. And so far, there's been 10 episodes. They've released the first 10, and the mid-season finale premiered last Saturday. So I figured since I will talk about the entirety of Season 2, I'll probably do another review of the show and talk about the entirety of Season 2 in a future episode, probably, I don't know, sometime next year whenever Season 2 finishes airing, whenever the season finale of Season 2 is. But for right now, I did want to talk about the first half of Season 2. So I figured I might as well, I'd do a podcast on it. So, but with that being said, let's start talking about Season 2. Season 2 picks up where the last season left off. Luce has just destroyed the portal back to that takes one from Earth to the Boiling and back to the Boiling Isles. She did it while trying, because she didn't want Belos, the Emperor of the Boiling Isles, to gain access to the human realm. So, and also because, that was the reason. And Lilith, who is Ida's sister, the owl lady, she's the one who's been taking Luce under her wing and training her to be a witch. She saves Ida from the Emperor's wrath, saves her from being turned into stone. And then she heals her from her curse and, transfers some of her powers, to her, and they kind of balance each other out, and they both kind of lose some of their magic, because Lilith kind of took some of Ida's magic, to kind of heal the curse, or, make it better. So, yeah, the season premiere is a great episode. Like I said, it picks up where the season one ended off, you know, with that being what I just explained. And Lilith is living with Ida, Luce, and Kane, and Hootie in the Owl House because she is now a fugitive of the Emperor's Coven because, you know, she betrayed the Emperor, saving her sister. And so she's living with them, and since Ida has kind of lost her magic, and Lilith has too, Luce is now having to train both her and her sister Lilith in order to get them back to being, you know, the most powerful witches in their realm. Which I kind of liked the switch there. I liked how the tables turned, in that sense. Like because in season one, it was Ida teaching Luce how to be a witch, and now that Luce has kind of you know, performed a lot of her own spells and has even learned some new techniques when it comes to drawing glyphs, which are like these symbols that each cast a different spell. Like she draws, like, I'm not entirely sure, I'll have to go back and look, I'm not entirely sure what each symbol is, but like she draws one and she just presses her like on a piece of paper, she draws one on a piece of paper, presses it with her hand, and like she can it casts an ice spell. She can blast ice or fire or a plant, you know, like a Venus flytrap. What's the word I'm thinking of? Root. Yeah. I don't know how I forgot, why I forgot the word for root. My brain just blanked. But anyway, so yeah, so, you know, so Luce is teaching Ida and Lilith how to cast spells using glyphs, in hopes of them regaining their full magic back. And Luce ends up realizing that Ida, because she hasn't been able to go to the human realm and still steal stuff from Earth for her stand in the middle of the town, in the town square, she is running a low on money. So, you know, and she's still trying to provide for Luce and Kane, and which that was sweet, you know, because like it shows how much all of them have grown since the first season and how very caring and very, how much of a second mother, how much of an adoptive mother that Ida has become for Luce. It shows the bond that they've come to form over the last season, you know. But Luce finds this out. You know, she doesn't let her know, but her and Kane see Ida, you know, trying to get, you know, food at the market, and realizing she's low on money, so they're like, oh man, what are we gonna do? You know, I feel bad. So she ends up working as a pirate on a pirate ship. And that's let's see. Yeah, she joins an ocean crew, a pirate crew, to hunt a Selkadamus, which is this mythical beast, and Kane joins her too. But yeah, so anyway, so long story short, they end up, Luce and Kane end up getting separated from the pirates, and they run into a new character who was teased at the end of the season one finale, known only, as of right now, you know, we only know him as of this right now, called the Golden Guard. And he's a pretty interesting character. You know, he kind of changes the dynamic of the show a little bit, in a way, you know, like, just, you know, keeping things fresh and all that. So it was cool to see a new character being introduced to kind of mix things up, you know. And we get a few more characters introduced in this season too that I'll get into in a few minutes, but yeah, so they end up encountering the Golden Guard on the beach after they get separated from the pirates, and the Golden Guard demands that the two of them kill the Selkadamus, or else he'll harm Kane. It turns out like he's kidnapped Kane, and he, you know, threatens to kill him if they don't kill the Selkadamus. Or harm him, you know. So Ida convinces Luce to stop blaming herself for, you know, everything that's happened recently, And she explains to her that her life is way better with her in it, which I thought was sweet. And then they find out that the creature has a child, so they fake killing the Sulcodamus, and the Golden Guard believes it, so he just leaves, and leaves Kane behind too. But yeah, so the creature rewards the two of them with some treasure, and yeah, so that's, let's see what else happens. Let's see. Well, yeah, Lilith and the subplot in the first episode is Lilith wanting to make things up to Ida by creating a scrying potion for her, and she acquires one of the ingredients, and Hootie, who's kind of feeling lonely, you know, tries to tag along, and throughout the episode, she's like, "No, you know, get out of here," you know, and you know, she's just, you know, kind of being stubborn and cold-hearted, you know, to him, even though he's trying so desperately to make friends with her. And, but eventually, you know, towards the end of the episode, Hootie ends up saving her from a swarm of bees after she, you know, tries to get some honey for the potion, and they become friends. And, honestly, this is one of my favorite parts of this season, is their friendship. Lilith is gone for about half of this half of the season, but what we see of her and Hootie's friendship is sweet. And also, I forgot to mention, Hootie is the, he's like a little decorative, he's not a door knocker, but he's like this little, I don't really know how to explain it. He's an owl that resides inside the door of the front door of the owl house, and he can like stretch and like, I don't even know, like, he's a living being. He can like stretch, like as far, like he can, I don't even know how far he can go, but he's like, he's basically a bird tube. Like, he's like a tube. It's like an owl and like a male tube, or like a, you know, like those tubes you see at the bank, whenever, you know, you go through the drive-thru and you get your check and it comes from that tube, or, you know, they put it in that tube in the bank and then it goes and it gets sucked in up top and then it comes down to you and then you sign it and you know, that's what he looks like. Or like a really fat hose, like a garden hose, but he's, you know, has feathers and is brown like an owl. So he's such a weird character, and the fact that Alex Hirsch voices him as well is hilarious, because he does like this high-pitched voice that could kind of become grating, I guess, after a while, but I mean, he's used sparingly enough to where it doesn't become grating, and also it's not that annoying of a register. Like, I mean, like, they could have made his voice like way more irritating than it is, you know, so it's not like, you know, that he's that bad, but it is funny. It's funny and kind of sad seeing everyone kind of just ignore him and not really give him the time of day. But that's why I like her, or that's why I like his and Lilith's friendship, because for the first time in a very long time, it seems like Hootie has a legit friend who, like, they even have nicknames for each other. Like that's something that only friends would do, you know, come up with stupid nicknames that they think are cool, you know, for each other. So, like Hootie's nickname for Lilith is Lulu, and Lilith's nickname for Hootie is Hootsifer. And it's so stupid, but it's funny and it's sweet. And, that's one of my favorite parts of the season, but anyway, long story short, yeah, Lilith completes the potion and it's basically the scrying potion allows them to spy on Emperor Belos in his castle. But unbeknownst to them, Belos is aware of the fact that he's being spied on, and we cut to him in his basement in his castle, and we see that him and a few of the other soldiers are, you know, continuing to rebuild the portal. That's what happened at the end of season one. There was a big reveal that he was taking what was left of the door and trying to piece it back together, as well as add more to the door to make like a newer, better portal to the human realm. So yeah, that was the season one, or I mean season two premiere, Separate Tides, and it was a really great season premiere. It like I said, it continued from the, it picked up right where the first season left off, and continued some of the, you know, the ongoing story and mystery of the that the first season had established and set up at the end of its finale, but also like kind of beginning some new plots and or, you know, like we see the beginning of some new plot threads that are going to continue throughout the season, or that continue throughout the season. But yeah, so I won't go into, like, I won't go into every detail of every episode. Like, I won't recap every episode, but I will go into the highlights of, like, the main story of what happens in every episode. So, but yeah, the second episode, Escaping Expulsion, we're introduced to two more characters. We're introduced, finally, to Amity's parents, who we had only seen their shadows in season one. Like, we saw in a memory, in season one, there was this episode where they had to recover Willow, one of their friends at Hexside, the school they go to. They had to recover Willow's memories, and when they were traveling through her memories in her head, Luce and Amity came across, Amity and Willow came across a memory of Amity's parents telling Amity that she couldn't be friends with Willow anymore. And so we got to hear them talk, and we got to see, like, their silhouettes, but we never got to fully see them, you know, and really hear them interact with anyone outside of that one, like, 10-second scene, you know. So it was cool to see that, it was cool to see them in person for the first time. And I know, because, you know, I was talking about how the show reminds me of Gravity Falls, not only in a sense of, well, several reasons, you know, but not only in a sense of the fact that Alex Hirsch is working on the show and voicing a couple of the characters on the show, and not only the fact that there's a villain who's trying to use a portal to go to the human realm to seemingly conquer it over, you know, kind of like how in Gravity Falls we had Bill, who was trying to manipulate Ford into building a portal so he and his nightmare friends could, you know, go to the human realm and conquer it, you know. So, I mean, you know, and, you know, not only that, but there's also, in my opinion, Adelia and, Odelia and Alador Blight. That's, Amity's mother and father. That's her parents. They really remind me of Pacifica's parents from Gravity Falls, where they're kind of like the richest people. I mean, other than like Emperor Belos or the Coven heads, but they're kind of like the richest people in town in their land, you know. And Odelia is kind of like, it's funny because they remind me of Pacifica's parents, but the roles of the parents are kind of reversed. Whereas like Odelia is more outspoken and kind of brash, and kind of just really an asshole, like when you think about it. But she's more commandeering and commanding and authoritative of her daughter, similar to Nathan, or not Nathan, Nolan, Pacifica's father. Whereas Alador is more reserved and, you know, in the background. Or not in the background, but more reserved and quiet, like kind of like Pacifica's mother. I mean, in a way, you know, like I said, they have their differences, but those main character traits that we saw from them in that episode, you know, I kind of got Pacifica's parents' vibes from them, but they were cool. And also, you know, I want to mention that. Because throughout the entire episode, I was trying to find out who Odelia's voice actress was, because it sounded so familiar, but I couldn't, like, place a name to the voice. It's, and actually, I forgot her first name right now. I'm going to look it up. Yeah, Rachel McFarlane, Seth MacFarlane's sister, voiced Odelia. And I thought, I'm like, she sounds so familiar. And then when I found out, when I looked in the credits of that episode and I saw that Rachel McFarlane voiced her, I'm like, oh yeah, she was Haley in American Dad. And, you know, I've seen a few episodes of American Dad. I haven't watched the whole show. I might one day. But, you know, there's like 10, 12 seasons of that, and that would take a while. But yeah, I, you know, when I realized who was voicing her, I'm like, oh yeah, you know, I've heard her before, you know. So I just thought it was cool that they got, you know, Rachel McFarlane to voice this new character. And I'm not sure who voices Alador, but he did a good job too. But anyway, so yeah, we really do get to see, a lot in this season. We're introduced to a lot of new characters, like I said. We're introduced to the Golden Guard, who, later in the season, we find out, he spends the first few episodes of this season shrouded in mystery. Like, we don't really know much about him, or even what he looks like, really, because he, along with all the other soldiers that Belos has at his castle, always wears a golden helmet, golden mask. And so we never really get to see his face until, I believe, episode 5. Let's see. Was it episode 5? Or maybe it was episode 6. Yeah, it was episode 6. Okay, yeah, so it's not until halfway through the season that we finally get to see what the Golden Guard looks like. And we also find out that his name is Hunter. And we find out, you know, we find out a few things. We find out, yeah, his name, what he looks like. He's got like a little cut on his ear, which I'm not sure what that means, but that you know, they may delve into that later. He's got like a scar going down his right eye. You know, he has a cool design. He's got like a gap in his teeth, you know. And we also find out that he's Emperor Belos's nephew. And you know, we just find out some really cool stuff about you know, Hunter. And in episode 5, episode 6, we get a pretty cool subplot where Luce and Hunter have to work together in order to escape Belos's henchman or henchwoman, Kikimora, and some of the other soldiers, because it turns out Kikimora sent a dragon to basically kill Hunter and get him out of the way, because she was kind of jealous that Hunter was becoming Belos's number one, or she felt like he was getting more attention and more recognition than she was, and she was, you know, basically jealous and petty. So she's like, ah, screw it, I'm gonna kill him, you know, and just say he died, you know, while I'll just say he, you know, got eaten, and we found the body, you know, and just make up some stupid excuse, you know. But yeah, so that was a good episode, and it was cool to see, because we, you know, at first we're like, oh, so Hunter's just an evil henchman, you know, but we, throughout the season, we get to see that he is actually, a little more complex, you know. We kind of get a feeling that he's doing this to try to impress Belos and live up to being his number one henchman. And we kind of get a sense that he doesn't, he's a kid, you know, like he's in his early teens, like Luce and Amity and Willow and all of them. But, you know, he's a teenager that has way too much pressure put on him. And, you know, we kind of get to see, like, him lose it in episode 8. Or not 8, my bad, episode 9, where him and Amity, where he ends up finding Amity and Kane and Ida trying to basically Luce is sick, and they have to, she has the common mold, which is common cold, and you just become delirious like when you have a cold, but for some reason there's fungus, you know, you catch fungus and it starts growing mushrooms on you and you kind of trip out. It's kind of funny, kind of weird too, but anyway, but they end up having to get Titan's blood because there's this little mouse they find a few episodes back called the Echo Mouse, who's got like a skull for a head, and he basically reveals to them, like every time he opens his mouth, it's like a projector, and he like projects old-timey, like, kind of footage of, like, events from the past. And he basically reveals that they need Titan's blood to travel between worlds. And so they're like, oh, okay, so maybe if we get that, we can somehow, we can use that to help us build a portal and get Luce home, you know. So while Luce is recovering from that, you know, Amity, Kane, and Ida end up going to Eclipse Lake to get the Titan's blood, and they run into Hunter. And, but yeah, so, you know, towards the end of the episode, they, we see that Hunter is kind of starting to lose it because he is failing at his mission. And he even has a moment with Amity where he says, oh yeah, you and I aren't that, you know, we're not that, we're more similar, we're more alike than you think. Or, you know, we're not that different, you and I. And Amity's like, really? We're not, you know, or really, I find that hard to believe, you know. And he mentions how they're both, you know, teenagers with a lot of pressure put on them by their parents or their, you know, or in Hunter's case, uncle. And, you know, they're both, you know, determined. So, you know, so determined to live up to their parents' expectations that it's kind of detrimental to their well-being and their, you know, their mental health and their, you know, sanity, you know, and their them as people, you know, because their parents and uncle are both are all three kind of not the best people. They're not really that good, you know, so I liked that scene where him and Amity were kind of bonding, and it was, and again, like I said, it was showing that there was more depth to Hunter as a character. They were fleshing his character out more. There was more to him than, you know, just evil henchman with a bunch of quips, you know, like telling a bunch of jokes on the side and, you know, just working for the big bad boss, you know. So I liked that. And but yeah, he ends up finding, but yeah, there, like I said, there's a lot that happens this season. I forgot a few characters too. We're introduced not only to Amity's parents and Hunter, but we're also introduced to Ida and Lilith's mother, who ends up leaving with, excuse me, who ends up, when she leaves in the episode she's introduced at the end, Lilith decides to go with her and spend, you make up for lost time, because when they were growing up, Lilith wasn't exactly the most favored child or the most paid attention to child, if that's even a phrase, if that makes sense. So yeah, she leaves, and we haven't seen her since, what was it, episode 5? No, episode 4. Yeah, so Gwendolyn, Ida and Lilith's mom, and Lilith leave at the end of episode 4 to go back to her place and make up for lost time. And she was a cool character, Ida and Lilith's mom, Gwen, she was cool. Who else were we introduced to? Let me see. Oh, we're introduced to Rain, who is a friend of Ida's from the past, who they kind of had a, they kind of used to date, and they're both, but it's been a while since they've, you know, hung out. And, when we're introduced to Rain again, it turns out they're being promoted to, was it like head coven leader? Let me look. Let's see. Rain is the newly appointed head of the Bard Coven, and we find out that they're we find out through some exposition Rain and Ida used to date. And that you can still, like, feel the chemistry and, or you can still feel the tension between the two of them, because, you know, they broke it off because of Ida's curse, you know, to having that Lilith gave her, you know, having transforming into an owl beast. That was a good episode where basically while Rain was working with Emperor Belos, they were also Rain and the group of people that they were in charge of. They were basically trying to take down the Emperor's, like, they were basically kind of like, well, not Robin Hood, but like they were like vigilantes in a way. Like anytime, you know, any of the soldiers from Belus's kingdom, you know, were like you know, just causing trouble downtown, like just picking on random citizens and shit like that, you know, they would come in and beat them up and use magic on them and drive them away, you know. So Rain was basically playing both sides of the field. You know, he was like working, or they were working with Belos, and they were also preventing Belos's reign of terror from, you know, like basically preventing his soldiers from just treating the citizens like any way they wanted to. And but yeah, so that was a good episode, and there's a few moments in the episode where Ida and Rain rekindle their fallen relationship, and they don't kiss or anything, but it is really sweet because Rain's, you know, giving her all these compliments, and she's remembering she's blushing, and she's remembering the time that they, you know, the times they used to have when they were kids, when they were teenagers, and it's it was really sweet, and I do low key ship the two of them, I hope they get together sometime in the future. That'd be kind of cool to see, or get back together, because they've established that they were a thing in the past. But anyway, but yeah, so Rain ends up getting captured by two of the other coven head leaders. Which, by the way, we also are introduced to like 12 different characters. We're introduced to each head of each coven. There's like 12 different covens, and then the Emperor's coven, which is like the 13th one. But we're introduced to like the heads of each of the other covens, and they're all, I don't think we've gotten a proper introduction for each of them. Like, we got to see them all in, like, I believe episode 2, but we haven't really gotten to know each and every one of them or their names. I don't think we've learned all their names or what they each do or who they are as characters, you know. But we do get to see a couple of them, Eberwolf and Darius, in this one. And they're pretty cool. Eberwolf is like this, like, he looks like a Pokemon. He kind of looks like Pikachu in a way, but he's like this weird bobcat cheetah, I don't know, he's like this weird wolf cat hybrid thing, and Darius is like this basically this regular human who can like transform into an abomination, which if you don't know, an abomination is basically like this purple slime monster that witches use and monsters too to kind of do their bidding, you know, like they can create sentient beings out of slime. And that's one of the covens, the Abomination Coven. He's the head of that, and Eberwolf is the head of another coven whose name escapes me at the moment. But anyway, so yeah, long story short, yeah, Rain's plan fails. They're trying to get rid of the Eberwolf and Darius, stop them. But Rain realizes that Ida has Luce and King to look after. So Rain forces her to run back to tell them. I mean, runs back to be with them, you know, because they realize, oh yeah, Ida has someone that she loves and cares about, and I have her. I care about her, but I'm gonna sacrifice myself. You know, I don't want to see her get hurt because I still love her. I still have feelings for her. I care about her deeply and still love her. So, but they stay behind to sacrifice themselves to Eberwolf and Darius, and yeah, Rain gets captured by Kikimora, and she, as his punishment, puts Rain into a deep slumber, and basically brainwashes him into staying as the appointed head, the newly appointed head of the Bard Coven, because Kiki's like, oh yeah, well, you're critical and crucial to Belus's plan. We need a head coven member for each coven, and we just appointed you. So, you know, we're just going to brainwash you and going to have you for now, you know, stay as the head of the Bard Coven. So, but yeah, so anyway, so yeah, and there's a bunch of other plots too. Like, Cain finds out some more about his past. He finds out that, he had a father who, you know, he finds out, they end up going to a cave and he finds out some about his past. He finds out that his father, you know, like he hasn't seen him in forever. And, we don't know why exactly the two of them got separated, but Ida ended up adopting Cain when he was a baby after he hatched from an egg. And so that's a subplot throughout the season is, Cain trying to contact his father and, you know, bond with him, make up for lost time. Cain ends up, getting adopted by Ida, which was a sweet moment because in that episode, Ida thought that, Cain was talking about leaving to go be with his father, to live with his father. And she couldn't handle the fact that he was going to do that because she, I mean, he is her pet in a way because he's like a wolf demon hybrid, but, like a wolf cat demon hybrid, but he's also in a way her son in a way, you know? So when that they revealed that at the end that, Cain just wanted to be officially adopted by Ida and Ida began to cry. Like that was a sweet moment. And again, like I said earlier, it just goes to show how much all of these characters have grown as people. But yeah, and we do end up seeing Cain's father a couple times, very briefly, but we do see him a couple times in this season. And we get to hear him speak. He ends up, delivering a letter to Hudi, who, I am assuming gives the letter to Cain. We don't see him get the letter, but I'm just going to assume that he did, for the time being. But he gives him a letter explaining, you know, why, you know, he left or why he's been gone so long and if he wants to meet and all that. And we don't get to see, we don't see what the letter says, but I'm assuming that that's what the message of the letter is. But yeah, I think I pretty much summed up everything. Yeah. So, you know, all that's going on. Cain ends up finding out that he has powers. Like when he screams, he has like these powers that can, I don't know. They're weird. I mean, I guess it's like a sound wave type of thing. That can like, you know, if it's powerful enough, it can knock over shit and stuff. And it's cool. And then Ida finds out when she ends up, in one episode, she ends up going into her mind, It was episode 8, knock, knock, knocking on Hootie's door. She ends up, finding out that, she goes into, or Hudi basically is trying to help everyone's problems. He's trying to help Luce and Amity. He's trying to help Luce, and Amity get together, because he ships them a lot as well as a lot of the fans of the show. So I thought it was funny that Hudi was basically a stand-in for the audience who, you know, desperately ship the two of them together. But he's trying to help Luce and Amity. Luce, tell Amity how she feels. And he's trying to help Cain, you know, figure out what kind of demon he is because he doesn't quite know for sure. And then he's trying to help Ida deal with her curse because she's still being afflicted by the owl beast coming out after she runs out of this potion she takes to, you know, repress the beast from unleashing itself, you know? So anyway, so in that episode, Cain finds out that, like I said, he has a powerful echo blast. So he unleashes, a power he never knew he had, which is cool. And then, Ida ends up, going on this weird, trippy dream journey and she encounters the owl beast, inside the dream. And she ends up confronting it and saying, "Hey, look, for the time being, you know, I it looks like you're stuck with me. So I guess, you know, we'll try to make the best of it." And so they both, agree to coexist. And then and at that point, when Ida wakes up, we find out that she can transform into, a harpy like form. And a harpy is basically, at least in Greek mythology, it's a half human, half bird personification of storm winds. Huh, okay. So yeah, she's basically half bird, half well, not human, half witch, you know, but half human like person, you know, half witch, half owl, you know, and it's a really cool design too, because she's like got all this red, she's got these red and black feathers, her eyes are a different color, and she's got like this lower register voice, or like she speaks in her regular voice, but like you can hear when she's speaking, she's got like this lower pitched, almost demonic kind of voice, as if like her and the owl beast are both talking at the same time, you know, like because they're coexisting now. So that's cool. And then Hootie ends up thinking, oh yeah, and then Luce confesses her feelings for Amity, and the two of them get together finally. I'm sure everyone in the fandom, at least everyone who ships them, I'm sure there's probably a small percentage of people who don't ship the two of them, but I'm sure most of the fandom ships the two of them. So it was cool to see them finally get together and not have it be something that's just dragged out. Cause that's what that's what bugs me about a lot of shows or some shows in particular, is when they drag out a romance between two characters. It's like, yeah, you know, cause like people seem to think, or people who make TV shows and movies seem to think that, especially in TV shows, cause you know, that you have more episodes and more time dedicated to the story, usually, depending on how long the show runs, then you do a movie. But it seems like people who make shows and movies seem to think that we like to see the chase, you know? And it's and that's fine, but it's not all we want to see. We want to eventually see the two characters get together. And again, anyone who ships the two in particular, like whoever, you know, whoever we're talking about in general, you know, in any fandom, that most of the time, if you have a well-written relationship, you know, you want, the characters have chemistry and you're like, oh, they start off as friends and then they get to know each other better and then they get together, you know, but it seems like, oh yeah, especially in like How I Met Your Mother and Friends, and I'm going off on a little tangent. I'll get back in a second, but I'm going back to this in a second. But, you know, it seems like the journey and the chase is what they think we like to see. And I like to see it, but I also want to see the characters settle down and actually get together and stay together, you know. And you can have drama in the relationship, but don't have them break up almost immediately after they get together, or don't have them break up too soon after they get together. Or better yet, don't have them break up at all, you know. Or if they do break up, have them somehow get back together, you know, like Marshall and Lily in How I Met Your Mother, they broke up like in season one and they got back together sometime in season two and they stayed together. Another example, within that same friend group, Robin and Barney, they got together, broke up, started dating other people, got back together, got married, and then they got divorced, you know, which sucked because I really liked the two of them as a couple, and I liked them as characters, and I liked them together when they were in a relationship, when they were a couple. So it sucked that they broke up. But anyway, and it's also like that in Friends too, where Chandler and Monica stay together for most of the time, like from season four to the end, they're together the entire time. And then you have Ross and Rachel, who get together, break up, get together, you know, have a baby, you know, have a one-night stand, have a baby, almost get back together, only to, you know, have an argument, see other people, and then in the very last episode, get back together, you know. And, you know, it's just after a while that can kind of become excruciating and exhausting to sit through, because you just really, because you like the two of those characters, you like these two characters, and not just Ross and Rachel, just in general, you know, but you like the two characters and you want to see them together. So in a way, sometimes it gets exhausting to just watch the chase of the two getting together instead of the actual end game, you know, instead of them actually getting together. So anyway, long story short, I love that we're actually now getting Luce and Amity together. I like that. And hopefully they don't do some stupid, you know, breakup shit, you know. But anyway, so yeah, so I think I pretty much talked about everything. Oh yeah, and then the mid-season finale, episode 10, Yesterday's Lie, we find out, earlier in the season, we found out that there was a creepy Luce doppelganger hanging out at Luce's house, hanging out with her mother, Carmella. wait, not, I mean, Camila, not Carmela, sorry. I was thinking of a different show. But hanging out with Camila and Luce, you know, her, King, Ida, and Hootie end up finishing, I mean, it looks terrible, but they end up finishing creating a portal for Luce to go check on her mother in the human realm. And they're like, well, it's temporary, but maybe we can try to make it permanent so you can get back home, you know. But she goes inside and she ends up in a strange place filled with cubes. And it's like this weird, it has this weird slime oil type substance, like, you know, on, like, it's like an ocean of it. And, or not really an ocean, more like a lake, you know. But anyway, it's, but the cubes allow her to interact with both realms through reflections, through like mirrors or windows or any other glass. And she finds out she discovers her doppelganger, and it turns out that she is a shape-shifting basilisk. I feel like I'm butchering that name, or that name, she's named V, and she was originally called Number 5, and she was a creature that was experimented on by the Emperor's Coven, and she ran away from the Boiling Isles, and you know, eventually found her way through the portal to Earth, before Luce blew the portal door up. She found a way to get in through it and decided to live on Earth and live Luce's life, as Camila was so kind to her. So she's like, I'm just going to stay here because I've never known friendship and a loving, caring relationship like you and your mother have, you know. So, but anyway, so Luce ends up trying to help her by guiding her to a museum where they learn that its curator has been hunt demons for years. And he captures V, and Luce reaches out to her mother and tells her everything, like the fact that she's been on the Boiling Isles for, the fact that she's been in the Boiling Isles for months, and she's been training to be a witch, and that the Luce that she's been hanging out with and, you know, caring with for the last few months has been a doppelganger. They end up, it's kind of funny that Camila thinks that this is all a game that Luce, put her up to. But the museum curator she ends up trapping him in the cage that she set V in after a little scuffle, after she finds out that, oh yeah, no, this is V is a real creature, and Luce is telling me the truth. She's literally in another dimension with weird monsters and all this shit. They attack the museum curator, lock him in the cage they locked V in, and V decides to just go free. And, She allows V to live with her, you know, until if she wants to go back to the Boiling Isles, she can. Camila and Luce have like one more final talk before Luce is pulled back to the demon realm. Cause the portal that they built, like I said, it's temporary, it's unstable. So, Luce and Camila are talking, Luce is pulled back into the Boiling Isles, and you know, her and Camila have a talk, and it ends with her tearfully saying, hey, you're gonna come back, aren't you? Like, you're not gonna stay in the Boiling Isles, right? And and Luce, you know, because she's hurriedly being, or you know, because she's quickly being pulled back, she's like, you know, she's doesn't really have time to think on the issue, but she just hurriedly says, yes, no, I'll come back, I promise. And and, you know, Camila cries, V comforts her, you know, and then she's pulled back, and that's how it ends. You know, it ends with, you know, King and Ida and Hootie like, oh yeah, so you saw your mom, everything okay? And Lucy's like, yeah, everything's fine. And she doesn't exactly let them in on everything that happened, but it was cool to... But that was a good season, or mid-season finale. It wasn't maybe as grand as I thought it was going to be, but it still did reveal a few things about the past. You know, we found out, or we got to see an image that the museum curator had up that seemed like Philip, which is Belos's, I believe is Belos, or everyone has this theory that Belos is real. Everyone has this theory that Belos is actually this man, Philip Wittebane, who was the first human on the Boiling Isles. And we see in, I think it is episode 5, or no, not episode 5, I think it was episode 9. Yeah, it was episode 9, episode 9 or 8. Sometime later in the season, we get to see Belos' full face, like, because for, and we didn't get to see him much in season 1, but throughout what we did see of him in the last two episodes of season 1 and throughout all of this season, you know, his identity, his face has been shrouded in mystery. So we never got to see what he looked like. And then when he reveals his face, it's like, oh, he looks human kind of, but he's got like this weird, like green, like rash or something like protruding down his face. Like, I'm not sure what that is, but I'm assuming it might have something to do with some like medical, like critical medical condition he has. But we finally get to see his full face. It's like, oh, okay, cool. You know, that was like an oh shit moment, like when King's father showed up for the first time. We got to see, when we saw him like viewing King's recorded message to him. I was like, oh shit, it's King's dad. you know, I got hyped. But anyway, so yeah, so a lot of people think that Belos is Philip, you know, and the little Echo Mouse that I was talking about earlier, who has the projector like mouth, you know, he played Luce and Ida and King, some of the old timey footage, and you know, we were led to or people were theorizing that Belos is Philip, and because he was brought from like the 16th, because he has been living there. Because people think that since Belos is Philip and he's been living there since like maybe the 1600s, like during like the Salem witch trials, maybe, you know, since he's been living there so long, he's been so hell-bent, so determined on trying to leave, you know, that he'll do anything, you know, and even rebuilding that portal and, you know, and even, I guess, killing Luce and Ida and Kane if he needs to. You know, if anyone stands in his way, he'll kill them because he's got to get back home. And they haven't confirmed that he is. They haven't confirmed that he is Philip, but I'm assuming we will get that reveal. And also, but anyway, going back to the museum curator, he had an image, like a picture, like a little drawn picture on his wall of two humans dressed in like 1600s attire, the 16th or the 15th century, attire from the 1600s. And one of them looked like Philip, or at least the silhouette of Philip we saw in like that weird video shadow message, recorded message thing that the Echo Mouse projected. And one of them was, but their faces were like sketched out, you know, or like erased, you know, and blurred out. So we didn't really get to see, you know, and I think that was intentional because they didn't want to reveal, like there's some mystery behind that. And I feel like we'll get to see a little bit more of that, you know, in the second half of this season. And also I like, and also the second or the season, the mid-season finale, this episode had, a few, guest voice actors. The museum curator was voiced by Roger Craig Smith, who, like, and again, another voice, that like with Odelia, that I remembered, like I knew as soon as I heard it, but I couldn't put a name to the face. And then when I saw that it was Roger Craig Smith in the end credits, I'm like, oh yeah, Thomas from Regular Show, which was one of my favorite shows, favorite cartoons. You know, so I'm like, yeah, now I know. Now it sounds like him. Now I got it, you know. And then Michaela Dietz, I apologize for butchering her name. I feel like I butchered it, but the voice actress for Amethyst from Steven Universe voiced V. And again, I knew her voice the second I heard it, but I just couldn't remember who who she was, you know. And then again, looked in the end credits, I'm like, oh yeah, duh, you know. I guess I should have picked up on that, but it's been a while since I've seen Regular Show or Steven Universe, so maybe that's why I didn't pick up on it, you know. But anyway, yeah, so season two overall so far has been great. It's set up a lot of stuff. It's continued the plot from the plots that have been continuing or that they've set up in season one, but they've also been introducing and showcasing new plots and, you know, new story arcs. And so far everything has been pretty interesting. You know, there's still an interesting mystery as to who Belos truly is and why he wants to go to Earth. Does he want to conquer it? Or, you know, is he just trying to get back home? You know, and there could be all sorts of twists and turns that the show takes. I mean, I don't know. And again, this also, real quick, this also pisses me off that Disney cut the third season down to 3 episodes. I mean, yeah, the 3 episodes that we're getting in season 3 are going to be twice the length of a normal episode of The Owl House, because The Owl House is a 22-minute cartoon, and 45 minutes, you know, I mean, that's still a long episode, but, like, that could have just been a movie. Like, calling 3 episodes of a show a season just seems kind of like a joke. Like, even Netflix shows have at least 8-episode seasons minimum, you know, like, that just... I don't know. I just feel like that's stupid, because Dana and the crew were planning on having a 20-episode third season and then wrapping up the show, at least from what I've heard, you know. But Disney, for some stupid reason, renewed the show for season 3 and then decided to just cut it down to 3 episodes, which is like a seventh of a full season of the show, you know. Like, well, let's see, 3, 6, 9. Yeah, so it's like, yeah, they cut it down to like a seventh of a full-length season. So I don't know. I hope they have enough, and that's my concern. It's just a little concern I have, is that I hope that they have enough time to finish all of these story arcs going on now and have a satisfying, you know, epic action-filled character, you know, emotional, you know, bittersweet, satisfying ending when the show does end in season 3, you know, because the fact that, and Dana said that too. She said that they've had to cut a bunch of stuff out or trim some stuff down that they were going to put in the third season and either put it in this season, season 2, or just not have it in the show. So I don't know. It sucks that they shortened the season down to 3 episodes, but you know, hopefully the show will end well, and I feel like it will, because Gravity Falls, again, going back to that for a second, but Gravity Falls has had a ran for 2 seasons and 40 episodes, and despite the fact that Alex, I think, knew that he only wanted to do 2 seasons and didn't get his season cut down by Disney, you know, despite that, you know, like, his show, he ended things perfectly. Like, that Gravity Falls to me is one of the few shows that has a perfect series finale. And, but I feel like that Dana knows what she's doing. You know, she's got, like Gravity Falls, you know, her show has an interesting mystery, great characters. And I feel like they're going to end the show on good terms, and it's going to have a good season or good series finale overall. So season 2 has been great so far, and now we're in a hiatus. I don't know when the second half of season 2 is going to premiere, but either way, I'm excited to see the rest of it and see season 3 whenever that premieres. I hope it's soon. No, it'll probably be sometime in the spring or maybe even the summer of next year. So who knows? We'll probably have to wait 7-8 months. But anyway, great. Season 2 has been great so far. That's all I have to say. So, anyway, thank you guys for joining me on tonight's episode, if you listen to it. I know I said last week that Sunday I was going to be releasing a new episode, but I'm actually going to release the next one on Monday, and then next Friday I'll release another episode, and that will be the season 2 finale or that will be the season finale of this current season, season two. So we've just got two more episodes, and then this season will be done. But don't worry, I'll release a trailer for, I'll give some more updates in the next two episodes as to when season three is going to premiere and what's going to be in season three. So with that being said, hope you guys have a great weekend, and I will see you guys Monday. So take care.